Deary. Case number 85305. Justice Lee is disqualified. Counsel, are you ready to proceed? All right. And Ms. Schmidt, would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, I would like to try to reserve 5 minutes.
All right. The bell will ring when your 5 minutes starts.
Great. Thank you, Your Honor, Chief Justice, and Justices of the Court. I am Allison Schmidt on behalf of the appellants in this case. I think this case presents some unique issues, even though the concepts predate the advent of Nevada. We don't have a whole lot of case law on it here. But if it pleases the Court, I would like to start out with what I deem the easy parts of this case or this appeal, and then move on to more of the meat that will address some of the issues raised by the amicus brief. I think it's important to understand the way this case played out very, very quickly. The case was filed in haste to get a TRO because Mr. Gadiri, the respondent, was commencing demolition of a property wall between two homes that had been standing for about 32 years. So the case is filed in haste. We obtain a TRO. Then, obviously, we get the TRO, serve the TRO, and it's set for a preliminary injunction, ordinary course. In conjunction with the filing of the opposition to our motion, Mr. Gadiri's counsel at the time, Mr. Zeminski, also filed counterclaims as well as a motion for partial summary judgment as to all the property issues on the case. And then we proceeded to the hearing, and the lower court granted summary judgment as to all the property issues. The case was open and shut in 2 months. There was no discovery. There was no early case conference. And one of the issues we raise on appeal and take issue with, and we took issue with in the court below, is that there was no admissible.
Did you ask for 56D relief in response to the summary judgment?
I did, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. And we had asked, and we supplied the affidavit where we said, you know, some of the things we would like to do is get our own survey of the property. One of the issues is that if you look at the motion for summary judgment, it mentions that Mr. Gadiri says he obtained 2 surveys of this property. Doesn't actually attach any of those surveys. There are portions of what appear to be a survey attached, and they are in the respondent's appendix, volume 1 at 125 and volume 1 at 132. The first appears to be some portion of a larger document. There's no signature, no context as to what this means. It's a picture of a triangle followed by some photos that aren't authenticated. We don't know who took them. We don't know what they purport to be of. We don't know what the location is, the date. We have none of that information. And then on in RA Volume 1 at 132, there is a piece of paper that says it's a survey exhibit. Most of the writing is unintelligible because it's so small. But we've never been given a full copy of any survey, let alone information about who completed the survey, whether that person is an expert that could be qualified as an expert, because there was no discovery and we never had an opportunity to get our own survey.
So, Ms. Schmidt, I have a couple of questions. So you briefed that. One factual and then legal. As a factual matter, as my understanding is, this parcel was basically a contiguous property that was subdivided in 1989, and these two parcels were separated by that wall since 1989. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So that's a factual question. So I had a question about legally. Can this matter be resolved entirely by existing Nevada law? And if not, what needs to be filled in? Because counsel is asking us to fill it in with California. Does it need to be?
I think that, yes, this is going to be a lawyer answer, but yes and no.
You're a lawyer. So
it's the only way I know how to answer. I think there is existing law that supports our position such that we do not need to resort to the use of California law. And I think that that law is the Boyd case, Boyd v. McDonald, or could be McDonald v. Boyd, as well as some other cases that we've cited. Obviously, the CSA development case, which is quite recent, is an unpublished disposition, and I know that the amicus takes issue with it. But I think, and I think they take issue with it because they are trying to adopt the California law. But I don't think that it's wrong. I think it follows existing precedent, and I'll fill in more of that.
Well, let me ask you this. Would the Jones characterize their request as the court observing a prescriptive easement? Or what legal vehicle suggesting the district court got wrong in their claim of, we'll say, access to this property, this disputed piece of property?
Great. I think that if you look at the complaint and the counterclaims, what we have here are several claims. There is a claim for adverse possession.
They didn't pay taxes.
And I think there's arguments to be made for that, but I don't have time to get into them today, and I don't think they're, our strongest
argument. You didn't argue that on appeal.
Were you making a factual argument that they were paying taxes because they improved that, assuming that the guy's right, that that's on his land, that they improved that portion, so that's part of the assessor's appraisal? I don't know.
I think that was part of the argument, is that the way that taxes are assessed includes the sales prices of property, which are based on their apparent size and their apparent boundaries when people go to look at homes to purchase. It's also based on improvements. It can be based on visual inspections.
Was that developed factually, or was the case too much in its infancy for that to get developed?
Those arguments were made based on the information that's public, which isn't, admittedly that much about how the Clark County Assessor arrives at our property assessments. But we made that argument. I concede that it's not the strongest, but I think that what the Jones also did is they've asked for prescriptive easements or other equitable relief, a deck relief, declaring, first of all, where this boundary line is. Where is the true boundary line? Is the wall on the boundary line? That was never determined. And what rights do they have in the property? And that doesn't need to be limited to a prescriptive easement. It could be an implied easement. It could be...
That wasn't argued to the district court below, was it, that it was an easement by implication?
I think it was, in that we argued that there was a unity of interest in the beginning. This house, the Jones's house, was completed in 1989, and then the Gadiri house was completed in 1990. In 1989, the developer sold this property with the walls where it is to the Jones predecessor in interest, while they still own the Gadiri property, presumably conveying that as, this is the property you're buying, this is the house you're buying, and this is the yard you're getting.
Was it a representation by Gadiri, though?
No, but I think that these are the predecessors in interest. And when you look at all the different types of equitable vehicles that different courts in different states use to get around this concept that adverse possession requires the payment of taxes, which is actually a requirement in a minority of states and a uniquely kind of Western thing.
We don't get to ignore what our statute requires for adverse possession.
I agree with that.
So what is your client asking for? Is your client asking to keep up the wall and the fence as it has been before? Is that what your client thinks it deserves out of this case?
I think so, yes. And I think because...
How is that not effectively adverse possession, which your client doesn't meet the requirements for?
Because adverse possession, if you're strictly applying the payment of taxes requirement, then it can never, an encroachment can never be upheld. So if you built your house and a corner of your house is over your neighbor's property line by 1 foot and it's been that way for 100 years, you'll never be able to keep that encroachment. You'll never be able to keep a property wall where it is because taxes are assessed in Nevada in every county based on parcels. Parcels and the assessment is in an indivisible whole. You can't say the amount of taxes on 2 feet from my property line, which is 50 feet long, so it's 100 feet, is $37 a year. There is no way to pay taxes on a smaller portion than the whole. So in the absence of some equitable doctrine, whether you want to call it an implied easement, a boundary by agreement, as some states call it, or a prescriptive easement, there can be no encroachments that get to stay. And it doesn't give effect to the intentions of the parties or the expectations of the parties. It gives a windfall to one party.
How is it a windfall to give the party the property that they actually own according to the property records?
Because I think what they could do then is sit and watch while you build a building, knowing that it's 1 foot over your property line, and then wait until they decide that they want to use that property. And now they can say...
Like an estoppel kind of theory or something?
Yes, and California actually applies estoppel. And one of the issues I have with saying, hey, we should supplement California law for the existing Nevada law in Boyd that says a easement can encompass a complete like possessory interest. In that case, a motel was built 2.6 feet over a property line, and the Nevada Supreme Court said that gets to stay. And they also remanded to see if an existing patio, an existing driveway extension would get to stay. So we have the law. We have a stare decisis issue here where this court in 1965 has said that an easement can encompass an encroachment of that nature where it's permanent in nature until it's abandoned.
Your client doesn't have a permanent structure on this property, do they?
Well, I would say that the wall is a permanent structure, and my client improved it, but I don't think that's the limitation of it.
And your client can park their clients can park their RV on what would be the actual parcel they own.
I'm not sure that they can. I mean, that was never developed. We never had any discovery, no reports, no nothing. So we have no real factual development as to that.
Counsel, do you want to reserve the balance of your time?
Yes, I do. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. My name is Malik W. Ahmad, and my bar number is 10305, and I'm thankful for this opportunity here. To this August forum. I'm also thankful to the real estate property section of the State Bar of Nevada because they have also filed an amicus curiae which would help us here. This honorable forum had said many times that the district court findings of fact should be upheld on appeal and should not be disturbed as long as they are not clearly erroneous. And supported by substantial law. Here, in this case, the district court findings are clearly supported by substantial evidence as well as by the law. Your Honor, they have three issues in their appeal. First is that Nevada has sparse, the district court acted on sparse California law, which is not true. Secondly, the district court acted on unauthenticated and inadmissible evidence, which is not true. And also, this court should not look further to determine the main issue presented here. This is not a small strip of land. This is 591 square feet, which had been captured by the adjoining estate. It is not an adverse...
Mr. Ahmad, just briefly, what of the plaintiff's claim that they did not get an opportunity to do discovery?
Okay.
Did they get a fair and full opportunity to do discovery before the court ruled on a summary judgment motion?
Your Honor, this the legal description have been presented to the court. The aerial view of the properties have been submitted. There were two surveys conducted.
So these were provided by your client?
Exactly.
Did the opposing party get an opportunity to do discovery, do depositions, provide their own experts? Did the court give them that opportunity before the court made the determination on summary judgment?
I believe the court used their legal and equitable power at that time.
So it's a yes or no. Did they get to do discovery?
Your Honor, I was the third and the last attorney in this case, so I probably could not answer it properly at this time. And what I know is that the documents were authenticated, the documents were admissible, they were the official transcripts of the state of agency, which is the building department of City of Las Vegas, and they have provided the a certification from them, and the building permits were pulled from them, and two surveys were taken subject to the approval of the building department of the City of Las Vegas and presented to the court, and the court was fully satisfied based on those two surveys and the certification from the City of Las Vegas building department, and they admitted all those evidence. This is all I can say at this time on the admissibility of the documents. And Your Honor, the court have granted my client declaratory relief. They denied their preliminary injunction, and they filed. This is the second time they are here, and they were denied the TRO, and they filed an appeal to the Supreme Court, and Supreme Court denied their TRO. Your Honor, this is the
They got a TRO. They got a temporary restraining order, but they were denied a preliminary injunction, and that was what was appealed. Isn't that right?
That's right, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
And in that TRO, they have injected all those things also, and the court says no. We are only restricted to the TRO. We cannot broaden this issue more than what it is. This is the Supreme Court denied in their order that thing. Your Honor, 591 is a substantial area. It is not a small demarcation of the line. If we build a condominium on 591, probably take it to Las Vegas Boulevard, maybe it is appraised at $2 million, if not more. My client
What are the dimensions of this? What are the dimensions of the 531-foot area? Because it starts in the front, and then it goes all the way to the back of the property. What's the length of the property?
I agree with you. It's called a triangular shape.
Right.
And my client probably was not even aware of this thing until he went to the City of Las Vegas, and they're the one who told him that this is your property.
And, sir, how many years had your client been in the property? How many years before he filed the lawsuit?
I believe 2016 he bought this property.
Okay.
2016, and he went to the City of Las Vegas for some other reason, and they told him this is your area, and you are entitled to take over this area. And that's what triggered all this proceedings.
And during the time that Mr. Gadiri owned the property, were there improvements to this now disputed area?
They made some, let me start with them. They widened the gate.
Mm-hmm.
They dismantled the old gate for the entry of the RV. An RV is not an ordinary size RV. It's a large RV with space out on each side. They removed the landscaping. There is a pedestrian gate. They removed that, and they added electric hookup, and they removed some of the landscaping, and they did some gravel yard entrance and something like that. And that was done, I believe, a year after their purchase of the property.
So a year after your client purchased the property?
No, they purchased the property.
Okay.
But and my client did some landscaping, and I believe he was interested to build some kind of casita. And despite the change at demarcation in the boundary line, there's still enough land left for them to park the RV. And they probably are not interested to continue there.
Sir, how are you coming to the conclusion that there's enough space to park?
Ma'am, I apologize.
Yeah, it's all right. How are you coming to the conclusion that there's enough space for the RV to be parked?
Based on the second survey. And the second surveyor went to them and told them, but they never accommodated him. They never opened the gate and talked to him. My client scheduled to meet them and organized some meeting, but they were not interested to talk to him at all. And still at this time, there is still enough space for RV parking, despite the change in the footage or area of the property.
How wide is the area of property in the front part of the lot?
Ma'am, I'm sorry, ma'am.
Triangle piece, how wide is it in the front part of the lot?
It is wide. I cannot give you exact specific dimension, but it is wide enough for the RV to enter, to change, to park, and come outside.
No, I think you're misunderstanding my question, or I didn't ask it very well. How, of the
591
feet, okay, how wide, how many feet wide is the front part of the triangle?
I think it's a smaller, and then proportionately it becomes wider at the end.
Right.
We call it a triangle.
At the widest part, how wide is it?
In all honesty, I don't know the answer. I cannot answer that question. It's a bit technical for me, and based on the survey, I can say it is 591. That's all I can say. The basic question are here still two. One is the adverse possession. The one criteria for adverse possession is that it require a payment of property taxes. They have not paid any property taxes. Only my client have paid property taxes. We asked them to provide proof for the documentary evidence for the property taxes. They have not given us any proof of the property taxes. My client, and they says they're not entitled to. First of all, they don't have a good claim for adverse possession. And in the alternate, they said, okay, if we don't have adverse possession, give us prescriptive easement. But they don't have prescriptive easement because this easement would disregard the legal description of the certainty of the parcel because they are trusting one case, which is the mainstay of their case, which is CSA Development LLC versus Patrick Bryant, and this is an unpublished case. The Bryants graded their lot and constructed a block wall, and then they encroached into another lot, which was subsequently bought by CSA, and CSA filed a complaint against Bryant for quiet title, which the Supreme Court and Justice Paraguay wrote that opinion the Nevada Revised Statute 40.090 governs certain claims for adverse possession, not for prescriptive easement. They don't have adverse possession because the adverse possession is codified under Nevada Revised Statute, and there is no revised statute for prescriptive easement, and the standard is clear and convincing evidence, and they don't have prescriptive easement, they don't have adverse possession, and that's all I can say at this time.
Well, counsel, for a prescriptive easement, didn't your client concede for purposes of the partial summary judgment that those elements were met?
I don't think he conceded to that.
I have a question, which is that you reference
findings of fact and the deference that we should pay to them. Like, if there's a finding of fact, we should honor it and respect it, and that's true. The problem I have is that in this case, according to the lawyer on the other side, there was not adequate discovery before the matter came before the court. There was not a contested, there wasn't a fair fight. In other words, there wasn't enough discovery. Now, I'm not sure whether we have enough record before us to assess that, but was there any evidence from the other side that they were able to develop? Or do you agree with her that there never was a case conference and there were no depositions and no discovery?
Your Honor, there was not enough discovery required in the first place. Everything was documented, and the district court, in their best discretion, decided not to continue with the discovery, and I'm not here to question that. They had sufficient evidence. They have sufficient government-provided documents, and they decided based on that that there is no adverse possession, which requires either a written memorandum under NRS 40 or some kind of a written documentation, and they didn't have it. And so they didn't have prescriptive easement. They didn't have adverse possession, and the court decided in my client's favor. The court said remove.
Did the other side object to the surveys that your client produced?
My impression is no. I didn't see anything, because those surveys were conducted under the auspices of the Building Department of City of Las Vegas. And they are authentic surveys. These folks have 20, 30 years of experience, and my client probably paid a substantial amount for those surveys. And the Building Department gave my client a license to remove the wall, a license to remove the hookup, and remove the landscaping. And the city came, and they authorized all his work.
So it appears to me from the record that the front part of the triangle was a little more than 10 feet wide. Would it be possible for them to drive the RV onto their property, even if
This is the second surveyor told them. And second surveyor in the survey said that you still could park RV.
Okay, not parking, but could they drive it onto the property? Was there space for that between the house and the lot line?
Your Honor, these are old houses, and they have plenty of spaces in front and in the back and on the side. So they could still have parked their RV there. And by the way, their RV is a very large size RV. It's not a regular RV we see every day. Any other question from the forum? Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate that.
All right, thank you, sir. All right, counsel.
Okay.
Counsel, before you get started, I wanted to go back to something, because I did not see anything in your opening brief, and I did not see anything in the argument before the district court where you requested the district court grant you 56 relief to engage in discovery before the motion was decided.
So in my opposition to their motion for summary judgment, I do request 56D relief. It's not an issue that I really addressed too well on our opening brief and appeal. It is in the...
is that in our record?
It's in the record in the transcript from the hearing where I'm asking for 56D relief.
Well, that's what I'm saying I read, and I don't believe anywhere in that transcript do you make a request at the time of argument on the motion to be given 56 relief to conduct discovery.
And so, I mean, when I look at this, I would, can Monday morning quarterback this appeal all I want, and I wish I would have developed that better. It is in the respondent's appendix. They do include their reply to our opposition and request for 56D relief, where they said that the 56D relief affidavit was insufficient because I wrote it as opposed to a party but that is permissible in Nevada.
Right. How are we supposed to evaluate the affidavit and whether it sufficiently described what discovery you needed and how it was going to help you without it being in the record before us?
I don't think we need to get there because there's no evidence whatsoever that that this wall isn't located on the proper boundary line. If you look at the evidence they provide, it's bits and pieces or snapshots or cell phone pictures of other documents. It's very hard to understand. And I think it's telling that they can't say what the dimensions of this triangle are, and they say that the surveys were conducted by Clark County. They were not. The only information I can glean about who conducted them, which is in AA Appellant's Appendix at 90, Volume 198, is there's a stamp that says Brenner and Associates. I don't know who from Brenner and Associates prepared this. It says it's an exhibit, but an exhibit to what? Some document, some full report that we have never been given. So for them to say it's 591 square feet, and that's not insignificant. If you do the math, it's 1% of the total land area of Mr. Gadiri's property. And so I think there's no evidence.
Evidence is there in the record that demonstrates a genuine issue of material fact about whether it's 591 square feet or not?
Well, the existence of the wall is a property boundary for 35 years. I think that should be given effect.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
All right, Council, anything further? All right, Council, thank you.